are clever talks. But I'm Donna Murray from Day Spring Church, and we've organised this with Christchurch. So thank you, Aaron, for hosting us all. And this evening, we're going to be hearing all about trafficking, Lent and me. So thinking about what we can do in terms of that difficult issue of trafficking. And Alan Townsend is our speaker. But yeah, as we go through, we'll have a talk and then a coffee break, and then come back for some questions that we can pose to Anna. So if you've got questions, could you let them have a go? And it should be summed in the pews. So it should be pens and posted it. We'll scribble them down and hold breaking for finding decision. Scribble them down or write them down in the break, and then we'll collect the questions together for the second half after the break. That really good. If there is a fire alarm, then of course find your way back out that way or through the doors at the side as well. So look, if there's any issues with that, just get out. That's the one. Anna, before I hand over to you, you talked to us now and asked if I'd pray for you, so let me do that. Heavenly Father, I pray that you would open up our eyes this evening to look and see where there's issues of trafficking. This is a global issue that sometimes seems very far from us and is obviously hidden as well. So open up our eyes to understand the things that Anna's going to go through and to reflect on how we can help with this. Amen.
Thank you. So I'm Anna, and I'm from Day Spring Church, so just over here. And I haven't had to travel too far. So in the previous weeks, I've been sat where you are, listening to the other speakers, which have been fantastic. So I'm feeling I've got a lot to live up to this week. So welcome. Let me bring us on. So my plan this evening is to start with the big picture. We're going to look at what is human trafficking, look at the global picture. I've been very fortunate. I've been able to live in different places around the world. I'm an army wife. So I'm going to tell you a bit about the places that I've lived and what I've seen in trafficking. And then there might be a quiz at the end to see where I've lived. No, not really. And then we'll look at the UK, we'll look at Wiltshire in particular. And then, having got to that point in Wiltshire, we'll talk about our response, and then I'm going to open it up again to what is the response of the church, and then our kind of overall response during Lent. So, human trafficking. It's the recruitment or movement of persons by means of the threat or use of force, deception, or coercion for the purpose of exploitation. This is just a brief definition. I'm assuming most of you have heard of trafficking before. And what trafficking isn't is people smuggling. So those people that are being paid by, say, Africans that arrive in Libya that want to get taken across the waters to Sicily and Italy, that's not people trafficking, that's people smuggling. Those people are paying for a service of sorts and they're going willingly. But trafficking is very much about the deception. It's about applying for a job. There was a famous example in Eastern Europe. They were advertised for ice cream sellers, friendly people to come and sell ice cream in the UK. And when they arrived in the UK, they were sexually exploited. So that's trafficking, when you're deceived and you don't know quite what you're getting into. And sometimes it is hard to distinguish between, in the case of labour trafficking, what is really, really hard work, and then what is trafficking. And it is grey area. I'm sure, like many people, you've turned up at work one day and perhaps you've had to do something you weren't expecting to do. Well, perhaps you felt a bit lied to by your boss, but that's not trafficking. Trafficking is when you're forced and exploited. So it's really the combination of all three: recruitment, deception, and then exploitation. And people are tricked into situations where they're bought, sold, abused, and exploited. So, for example, sexual exploitation, forced labour, street crime. Beggars are recruited and told to go on the streets and pick pockets and try and beg for things. There's forced labour. There's the sale of organs and human sacrifice as well. And it's men, women and children. They can be trafficked within their own countries, and they can also be trafficked across borders. So I have a list on the next page of all of the things that people can be prosecuted for trafficking in. So there's child soldiers, that's another one that takes place in Africa. Domestic servitude, there's been cases when I lived in Hampshire, first place I've lived that I'm mentioning. There was a case in Fareham of a child who was brought into a household, kept as a prisoner in a household for domestic service. Forced crime and the drug trade. So does anyone know, you can shout out, how many people are being trafficked at this moment? How many people are held in slavery right now? Any thoughts? Anybody heard any numbers?
A million.
A million around the world?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. More than that. Well, the best estimate is that it's 35.8 million people around the world are in modern slavery. And it is the second, the second biggest kind of organised crime. So number one is the sale of drugs, that image is showing you. The second is human trafficking. So globally, if you want to make a lot of money, and the reason people make money is that you can sell them over and over. Whereas drugs, you know, you've sold it once and then it's gone. You need to go and get some more if you want to make more money. But if you have a person, if you're selling them for sex, you know, they can keep selling that. So gathering these statistics is hard because really we only see the tip of the iceberg. We only see the cases that are caught. And the very nature of trafficking is that it's deceptive and it's hidden. So there's all of this happening underneath. So this 35.8 million is a number that's been come up with, and it's a best estimate, really. It could be a lot higher than that. So profits from human trafficking are estimated by the International Labour Organization to be 150 billion annually. And that, if you're anything like me, you can't really imagine what 150 billion annually is. But it's a lot of money. And the estimated amount that's being spent to stop human trafficking is 350 million, so it falls way short of what we need to tackle it. And every hour, so if we think that we'll be here for maybe an hour now by the time I've done questions, every hour there's 125 people that are trafficked. So by the time I finish talking, it'll be up to nearly 200 people just while I'm chatting to you being trafficked. It is a massive problem. So let's start to bring this down then, because those statistics are huge to think about. So I was very fortunate. In 2004, I went to live in Nepal for 2 years. My husband served at Buckley Barracks. If you know where Buckley Barracks is, on the way to Malmesbury. And he worked with the Gurkhas, who used to be at Buckley Barracks, not there now. So we were very fortunate to go out to Nepal. And since then, I have founded and run a charity in Nepal that looks after women that have been abandoned. They're by no means all being trafficked, but some of them have, a fair percentage of them have. So these are a couple of the women that I want to tell you about. This is Bal Kumari on the left and her daughter Salome. In Nepal they can't afford pink and blue clothes for boys and girls, so this is Salome, a girl in blue clothes. And Bal Kumari's husband went off just to work in a different part of the country. He didn't abandon her, but whilst he was away, Bal Kumari was living with her in-laws, and her in-laws decided to prostitute her. They thought, I guess, that they needed some income, why not use her that way? So she went into a kind of abuse and mental health situation because of this, as you would do. It's very hard to cope with if your in-laws are treating you like this. And eventually, an organisation that we work with called Koshish, which helps women with mental health problems in Nepal, rescued her and then rehabilitated her, and we have taken on the care of her since. Her family won't accept her back because now, although they're the ones that prostituted her, she doesn't want to go back to them, and they wouldn't have her back anyway. So that's Bal Kumari. On the right, who's the left, is Lisa. Now Lisa works for us now, and she speaks wonderful English, she's educated. I think some of you will know Lee Abbey and north of Devon. Have you heard of Lee Abbey? So she spent a year there. Lee Abbey takes international sort of kind of Christian students. And so she spent a year in the UK. She is not stupid, and yet she was trafficked to Cyprus. She accepted a job in Cyprus to take care of an elder person She thought she was going to take care of somebody in a wheelchair, but once she got there to Cyprus, she was made to work in the field. She worked 6.5 days a week, just had Sunday afternoons off. So we kept in touch with her, and very wonderfully, one of our trustees eventually got her out and paid for a ticket to return to Nepal. So it isn't just the very poorest in Nepal society, it's also the educated ones as well. The ones who want to do better can still be tricked and exploited. And now Lisa works for us, so they're both being helped by us. Now this is a story across borders. This is Sada and Sunita. Sada's husband died. She had 4 children at that time. Sunita, on the right, was her eldest child and was 13 at the time her father died. Sunita needed to leave school. She wanted to work to provide an income for her family. There's no social services in Nepal. And so she too was tricked. Another man that was known to the family offered her some work. She actually refused to go. She didn't want to leave. But he poisoned her, took her across the border into India, and she found herself in Delhi working in a brothel. I saw her after 8 years. She actually managed to escape, and Sada, her mum on the left, had been praying for her every night in all that time, praying for her to come out. And God answered her prayers, which was just fantastic, and she came back. She describes what she went through. She was having to have sex with up to 7 men a day. She saw her friends, not herself, thankfully, but her friends having forced abortions. And she had described how she would hide in cupboards. They had false cupboards where if the police raided the brothel, they would go through the cupboard into a room behind and be hidden there. So clearly Sunita was lied to. These other examples are women being lied to. And it's my theory, really, that society has lies within it that allow trafficking to take place. So in the case of India, they have arranged marriages. And what they've done in India, the marriage ideal that God had for us about sex being part of a marriage has been split. So they have arranged marriages, which are really economic, about getting a woman to run your house, diplomatic ties between families, and they see it, not all of them, but see it accepting us to go and pay for sex elsewhere, because these two have been separated. And it's that breakdown of the family, really, that I believe is driving the kind of demand for trafficking. And then there's the caste system, which you've probably heard about. So there's different layers, kind of not like a class, but people are born into the caste system. And the Brahmins, which are at the top, they're meant to represent the head. And then you've got the fighters, you've got the merchants, that's the stomach, the belly, and then the legs are the lower caste. And then below that are the low caste, the Dalits, which maybe you've heard of. So a lot of these women are from that low caste. And they are genuinely viewed as not being important, not being worth much. And it, you know, it doesn't matter if you just pay them for sex. They're just not worth much. So there's these ideas that have been broken down in society. Marriage is broken down, and this idea that everybody is made in God's image, that's been taken down as well. Let's just look at Cambodia. And this is really shocking in there. There's a belief in Southeast Asia that if you have sex with a virgin, it will cure you of AIDS. So, of course, that drives a demand for virgins, and virgins tend to be young. So the age of these trafficking victims has come down and down and down. 8-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 6-year-olds are taken. And they're not just used once. They sew them up and sell them to the next brothel. It's really, I think, shocking. So the lie there is that egg is not cured. So I've also lived in the USA. I was on the board of a charity in the USA called Virginia Beach Justice Initiative. Americans like their long names. And returned last year. Now, the USA, most of their victims are from within the USA. They haven't had many trafficked from across borders. It's USA. And there's grooming taking place on quite a large scale. And this is when men come along to young girls, teenage girls, and say, I'll be your boyfriend. Here, have this new dress. I really love you. And then they turn it. If you love me, I need some money, you need to go out and do this. And they get them hooked on drugs and increase the lies. And these girls just get trapped, addicted to drugs, still in many cases trying to impress this boyfriend, thinking that, yeah, they can handle this. If I sleep with these men, you know, that's all right. This is what a grown-up does. It's hidden even more. The internet and mobile phones allow trafficking victims to move from place to place. You don't need to be in one fixed address. You can just, you know, rent an apartment for a couple of weeks and run your brothel out there. Then if the police start coming around, you just go somewhere else. Now, what's the lie then in America? And I would argue it's the consumer culture. There are subscription-only websites in America where you can pay a high membership fee. They're secretive, these websites, and there's all the details of the girls that you can pick from and choose. And they're rated. So just in the same way that we might rate a washing machine that we bought from Argos, you can go on and find out what other people, other men, thought of those women. You can find out their age, whatever your age is, so perhaps they're advertised, I don't know, over 18, but you might find out on this website they're 14 or 15, and some people want to choose that. You can find out what they'll do, the size of their breasts is compared, all sorts of kinds. And there's special sites for underage men, also for gay men to go on as well. So it's this highly, highly consumer culture. And pornography is driving demand. There's been a number of studies in the US that look at men that have been convicted for using prostitutes, and they found that in almost 99% of cases, pornography has driven that demand, that idea that you can buy this, that you can consume it and keep buying it again, and it's your right to buy it. And what I particularly found in the US, and I'm going to apply this in a minute to the UK, is that Americans in general don't deny themselves anything. So you see it with guns. They just will not leave their guns alone. They still want their guns. They just don't believe in denial. And so this is fed into trafficking as well. It's, if they want it, they feel they should have it. And that to them is freedom, this whole great American freedom. But this is the flip side. Too much freedom is bad for society. Let's come to the UK then. What's happening here? I'm sorry, these are a little bit small. This is one image, but I'll tell you what. On the left is the countries of origin that trafficking victims have come from. So these are cases that police have dealt with and recording where they've come from. So the top three are Albania, Nigeria, and Vietnam. And the one probably you're interested in as well is that orange one here to the left. That's the victims from the UK. So you see that's really only about 5 to 10% of victims have been internally kind of groomed perhaps or taken hold of in the UK. The rest have come from overseas. And then the graph on the right is what they've been found that they've been trafficked for. So there's almost half and half between labour exploitation, which is the red one on the right, and then the purple is sexual exploitation. And then the other two are unknown and domestic servitude. So it's kind of even, that you can say. If anyone wants to look at them in more detail, come and ask me at the end. So the Metropolitan Police estimate that over 20,000 people are trafficked into and throughout the UK every year. This graph on the right is the cases that they've caught, and it's 1,617 altogether. So really, we're only catching 10% of what they estimate is going on. Due to the crimes hidden in the criminal nature, gathering exact numbers remains a constant problem. It's only by equipping people to spot it and report it, this is what I'll be doing to you later, getting you to spot it, and gathering that information will a clearer picture begin to emerge. Okay. So as with the US, internet and phone allows perpetrators to hide. We too can move our women, our trafficking victims from place to place to place. I don't know, but I've got a news article to show you. This is a sleepy British seaside town plagued by pop-up brothels. Police discovered 14 brothels in Newquay in 6 months. And Newquay's not the largest of places. It gets a lot of tourists, but it's not that large. So in this case, I've copied this from the internet. It's gone very small. Excuse me. Right. So the police are warning that this is happening all over Cornwall. It's not just in Newquay. They're working on a crackdown and saying women could be victims of human slavery and sex trafficking. So the police have actually admitted that these are being, the women are arriving there through trafficking. In this case, they were from Romania. And what they do is rent apartments. So find them online, rent the holiday apartments, perhaps for up to a month, 3 weeks, 2 weeks. The owners of the holiday apartments have no idea this is taking place, and they turn up and run at these pop-up brothels. And that's just Newquay, not that far away. This was a case that took place in Aldershot, another place I've lived, in Aldershot. And this church, the church that we were at was in the centre of Aldershot, and just, I think maybe 30 metres from the church, there was this brothel operating. It was a massage parlour, and from the front there was nothing much there, but we found this advert for it online with the Sun. So the Sun is obviously a national brand, it's well known. And this was the review of the massage parlour. It says, happy ending guaranteed. That's a euphemism. I knew this the second I walked in and was greeted by my masseuse, who was wearing nothing but a tiny bikini. She even let me go down at her. I'll be back. So this is blatantly out there. This advert, this review, telling other people where they can go to a woman and find her. So we took a screenshot of this. It was removed. And we contacted maybe 1,000 people all around Aldershot, anyone with a vague interest in trafficking. And really, nothing much was done, other than the review taken down. The police did visit, but they couldn't really find anything. The problem is you can't prove it. If it's operating as a massage parlour, how do you prove anything's taking place if the women won't admit to it? But the problem is they're too scared to admit to what's happening. So what are the lies that are driving trafficking in the UK? So again, I think we have to admit we have a consumer culture. I don't think it's as bad as the US. I think we still in the UK deny ourselves some things. But it's creeping up, isn't it? I've noticed another aspect though, and that's the social side. I think in the UK we do things in peer groups, and we look for acceptance and approval of what we're doing in peer groups. I can't believe the number of comedians on television who admit to watching and using pornography. It just seems to be socially acceptable now. No one challenges it. And sadly, there is a culture of going to a football game on a Saturday, drinking all evening, and then buying some form of sex, whether it's a strip club or actually seeing a prostitute. And that is normal behaviour for certain peer groups. And I think we let it happen within those groups. Friends let their friends do it, and we don't challenge. We have this great need in the UK to kind of be socially popular. And that wasn't there in the US. And I know it's kind of hard because it's what we're used to, but coming back, I see that as a problem. The US, they do certain things slightly differently. Like they pull their children out of school and homeschool them because they're not so worried about the social side of things. Whereas in the UK, we put our children into school, don't we? It's important that they learn their social skills, and we do have this emphasis on social side. But you may disagree, you're welcome to disagree with me, but I'm just pointing that out. So let's look at Wiltshire. And of course, you may have seen that there was this headline just last Thursday, I think this newspaper comes up, Shock Over Brothel. This is a brothel operating on Station Hill between two churches. It was reported and took 18 months from the time that it was reported before the police did anything to address it. So it's happening here, sadly. There's also been a marijuana farm discovered in a former nuclear bunker in Wiltshire with Vietnamese teenagers working in it. Shocking, really, isn't it? Shocking that it takes place here. And then officers from Wiltshire Police have been instrumental in the arrest and detention of 16 people from an organised crime gang in Romania who set up pop-up brothels in Swindon. And the next one. There's more. I've taken all of these headlines from the last 18 months. I did a search through the internet. So three men have been arrested on suspicion of human trafficking offences after concerns 8 men were being exploited. The men were arrested at a traveller's site in Severn, Wiltshire, and questioned at Melksham police station. So there's kind of happening all around us. There's Chippenham, Swindon, Melksham, I've mentioned. And the lie is no one's watching. Well, I guess that's why I need to do this talk tonight, to say we need to start watching. We need to start looking out for this and seeing what's happening. And we need to bust that lie, because people are watching. So I've talked tonight about the lies, and I do think it comes from Satan, this. He is the deceiver. And trafficking couldn't happen if we had kind of universal truth. It is because Satan's planting lies, against the trafficking victims, but also planting lies in society that allow it to happen. So what can we do about this? Now, I have to apologise, because I have ordered some cards for you, and I did this last week, so I'm disappointed they haven't arrived, but I have a list of the signs to spot. So I am going to bring them next week, because I will be back here. This is one advantage of being local. But otherwise, I have these. If you're not here next week, take one of these now. Otherwise, do you want to pass them back? Otherwise, I've got something much better for you next week, basically. Right, so if we remember our original definition of trafficking, it was about recruitment or movement, force and deception to be exploited. So we're looking in all of this for a combination of things. It won't be that you'll see one of these and think, oh, that's definitely trafficking. It is a combination. So perhaps you'll see a young girl with an unrelated older man or a group of men. It could be someone who just seems to be under someone else's control. They seem to be taking direction from this person, and you're not really sure why they're doing that. It could be someone who's physically and emotionally distressed. And a good idea is to look for cigarette burns. Often they've got cigarette burns on the back of their hands, these people, because that's an easy way to get them. Maybe they're overly submissive. In the US, girls that belong to a particular pimp would be branded, so they'd have tattoos or even burn marks on them to say that they were branded. So our organisation was getting tattoo artists free of charge to change those tattoos. So perhaps if they had something like the name of somebody that they belonged to, but the tattoo artist rather than removing it, which wasn't always possible, would change that design into something pretty or something that the girl wanted, so she didn't feel she belonged to that person anymore. And then a child traveling alone or with unrelated adults. Okay, so I'm reading these to you because I really want you to take these in. Not just read them yourself, but listen to them as well. An individual who doesn't have access to their passport, this would maybe be you if you're traveling. Someone who gives money they earn to someone else. Lots of people living in one property. And a group of people that's often picked up, dropped off at irregular hours from the same place. I've reported trafficking once other than this massage parlour, and it was a group of men who were working in a car park washing cars. And they just didn't really have the right equipment. They would just have a bucket, and then they didn't have the right protective wear on. It was just those sort of high-vis jackets. Wasn't really waterproof. And then the point that really flipped it for me was one man was asleep in their beat-up car. And I just thought to myself, this is strange, this is not right. They're obviously either living out of their car or they've been picked up really early in the morning. I need to report this. So the number to ring is 101. And the police will take your details and take the details of what you've seen. Sadly, the police don't get back to you to say what they've done. But I felt in this case it was the right thing to do. So the last screen of this is someone who's excessively tired or drugged, someone who's overly fearful of police or the authorities, and someone who does not speak the local language, or in the case of sexual exploitation, perhaps only knows highly sexualized words. So that will get your alarm bells ringing, I think, if you see these things. So once a victim's been recognised, They enter what's called the National Referral Mechanism, NRM. So those statistics I showed you a little while ago for the UK, they were the victims that have entered the NRM. So it's a big process. I saw a flowchart once explaining it. It was this sort of size, and all these arrows showing what happens to victims. Okay. So how can you take action beyond the individual then, if you want to stop this happening? So CARE, which is a charity, kind of lobbying, Christian lobbying group based in Westminster that's addressing public policies, do some fantastic emails that you can sign up to get weekly, and they will tell you exactly what's happening. So at the moment, there's a digital economy bill going through the House of Lords, and they are looking to kind of control what level of pornography is available on the internet. The age of people, they're wanting to introduce age verification, and they're looking at the types of pornography that could be allowed. So if you're interested in stopping this, I would suggest that you pick a lord to write to and let them know that you're concerned. I think at the moment they're moving in the wrong direction, because what they're saying is they want to put more violent pornography online, as long as it's behind age verification, which, you know, anybody can lie about their age. It's not going to stop somebody who's desperate to get there. And in the US, they found that amongst people that attend church, it was 54% that viewed porn on a weekly basis. So this is a big, big problem. And I don't think there's any point in us hiding and pretending it doesn't happen, because it does happen. There's also a new UK Safe Online initiative, and this is about making the internet in the UK the safest in the world. So that's, again, a great initiative that's been drawn up by ministers, and it's really aimed at young people, stopping them getting online. The average age for somebody looking at pornography online for the first time is 11. So this is happening to young children. I have a 13-year-old son, and whilst I don't believe I know he knows that it exists, but what would drive him towards it is actually curiosity. And then, you know, peer pressure. It's hard for a young boy to say no to this, and I'm thankful that I think he has so far. But, you know, the pressures are out there. We need to be praying for our young people, and hoping and praying that they don't get onto this, and talking to them about it, really, and doing everything that we can in the public sphere to limit their access. Looking at the right then, these are things that have happened that are good. So there's been a $6 million fund to fight child slavery. This is about looking at goods that are made overseas that have perhaps had child labour involved in their manufacture, and cutting that out. So it's looking at supply chains. The SNP in Scotland have said that they'll criminalise sex buyers. This is called the Nordic model. You may have heard of the Nordic model, where it is completely and utterly illegal in Nordic countries to buy any form of sex. If you're caught buying, you're prosecuted, and it has deterred the buyers. And then the women are just treated, or boys in the case of gay men, are treated as victims, and they're not criminalised. But it goes out to the buyers, and it's been shown to work. So the S&P has signed up to that model, which is great news, because they should be able to push that through in Scotland at least, and then at least hopefully it will trickle down to England. And then the other good news is this 40-day pledge. So at the moment, this NRM, this National Referral Mechanism that I talked about, that victims enter, they're given help and rehabilitation, it ends immediately at 45 days. There's only funding 45 days, and then they're out in the world again. So to get rid of that cliff edge, there's a new initiative coming forward to look after them for longer, to put some agencies in place that will care for them. Because at 45 days, they're vulnerable still, and they may just get sucked back into trafficking again, and their people may get back in contact. So those are some praise things. How can we take action as a church then? I think the church needs to face up to the use of pornography, realise that it's driving sex trafficking, it's increasing the demand for victims. We have done with Fair Trade, I think, the church has led the way, and we've seen a change in the use of Fair Trade and how available it is. I think it's now time for the church to stand up to the next thing, and I think pornography could be it. going back to the statistics, I said, haven't I, addiction starts with 11 to 13 year olds, and that's girls as well as boys. Smartphones are making it more accessible. 32% of males said they watch pornography on a daily basis, whereas that's just 4% of women. So we need to know about these things, I think, and realise it is happening. CARE, the charity I've already mentioned, they have resources for churches, as do Stop the Traffic. There's courses out there to run for men, just to get them thinking and talking about this and praying for this, and for women as well. And the thing to pray for as well is this over on the right. It's MindGeek and Pornhub. They're like the Amazon of pornography. There is basically one big company that now has monopolised pornography and the provision of it on the internet. So I kind of think that's like a Goliath. And I think, you know, the church in the time, David took down Goliath. Perhaps the fact that it's centralised means that if we could bring it down through prayer, it would be gone in one fell swoop. So in one sense, that kind of excites me. I think a lot of people think it's too powerful to mess with, but we've got God on our side, so he's too powerful to mess with. We need to pray as well that the unseen will become visible. And then if we suspect trafficking, we can call 101, which is the non-emergency police line. Obviously, if you think something's happening right there, then you need to ring 911. And I think the church needs to stand up to this and encourage me. And then finally, thinking about Lent then. So this is my first Lent without chocolate. And I'm struggling a little bit without chocolate. But I pray that every time I deny myself chocolate and turn away from it, that somebody in the world somewhere will be turning away from either pornography or trafficking, or preferably both at that point. And it's this powerful action, it's this symbolic action I believe we can do as Christians to kind of bind things in the heavenly places so that on earth they're bound and these people are held back from the lies and the trafficking of victims. Jesus said that whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. And then finally, at the end of Lent, when we've denied ourselves for all this time for chocolate, or whatever we're denying ourselves, we have a celebration, we have Easter. And my favourite image in the Bible when I'm praying for the victims of trafficking is from Psalm 23, and it's not the beginning bit that everybody knows, but it verse 4, I think, talks about the Lord preparing a table for me in the presence of our enemies, and he honours those that are drawn into his table. So I pray that for victims. I pray that God would draw them in, that he would banish their enemies to the outside, that they would be gone away from them, and that he would honour them and restore them just like that wish. So that's all I have to share. Thank you. I think you want to say something more?
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Alan, for explaining what is such a complex and challenging issue. Just fascinating to sort of learn about it, really. It's a bit gobsmacked as well, of course. But good if you could join in the question time by noting down any questions or letting me know any. And we have a coffee break now. So if you might want to talk about some questions as we're getting coffee now. And also, I'm looking at that you've put out some of your books. Do you want to say you've written a book, which is a what's the title of it?
Okay, it's called Destination Transformation, a 40-day journey to change the world written for people with baggage. Short title.
Yes.
So it's 40 days. It's like 40 days of readings and little studies to do. And then I've also put some leaflets out for the charity if you're interested in that. I know there's a lot to take in. So yeah, ask me anything.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy your coffee.
Yeah.
there's groups of people out there who feel it is their right to view forms of pornography. So this is pornography that's not illegal. It's called simulated pornography or simulated violence. So it's essentially they're hiring its actors and they're, you know, doing things that's apparently safe, but we would consider violent, okay, depicting violence. And the people who are lobbying for this believe it's their right to view this. And so they're trying to get it on the internet, and the government's coming from the opposite point of view saying, well, actually, yes, okay, it's not illegal, we're going to put age verification on it. So there's two sides to this. Does that answer the question? I don't know if you're asking.
Yeah.
But people feel that it's their right to view this. They don't want to be restricted.
Okay. And I guess also with the thinking about the internet, why is it not possible to just block pornographic sites on the internet and in all forms of social media?
Well, because not anybody thinks like us that it's wrong. People do believe it's their right and that they want to see it. They believe that they can put enough safeguards in place, that it's actors with proper contracts, that people aren't being exploited, etc., etc., and they don't see that they should be stopped. I suppose it's the same way that we might view fatty foods. We don't want to be banned from eating fatty foods. And they have the same view about pornography, but obviously we know it's bad for society, we know it's bad for them, and it's certainly improved in the US. The link between pornography and trafficking comes from people. The study has been done on perpetrators in the US looking at their habits prior to them purchasing sex. So you can't say that everybody viewing pornography is going to go on to buy sex in some form, but what you can say is that the people that have been caught, almost 99% of them, were viewing pornography. It fed their kind of addiction, their habit, their demand for it.
Okay. So that bill going through Parliament at the moment?
Yeah, going through the House of Lords. So it has gone through the Commons, and now it's been kind of checked and verified through the House of Lords. It was discussed last week, but it's still having tweaks, you know, put on it. So,
what's it called?
The Digital Economy Bill. So it's not just looking at pornography, it's looking at all kind of services that are provided online.
Okay, thank you. So thinking about trafficking victims, you said about that cliff edge after 45 days. So the question is, after 45 days, how can victims manage if they have no accommodation?
Yeah, so actually they're pointed in the right direction. They may come under, say, in this area, Wiltshire County Council, people trying to get them into housing. But what it means is that there's no personnel, there's no specialist with kind of victim experience, human trafficking victim experience to support them at that point. They then go on to the next victim that's found. So they're kind of just within social services. They, you know, they maybe get somewhere to live. They might go to a food bank, but they haven't got the specialist care after that 45 days.
And you were giving some kind of good examples earlier on in the court where people are being rescued.
Did you see a little bit of that?
You switched on.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. So thinking about the examples you gave in the court where people are being helped, what kind of help do they need? You were sort of saying they need mental health support.
Yeah,
is that
okay?
Yes,
there is some counselling available, but again, only for that 45 days at the moment.
Okay.
And then you'd either need to be paying for it or you'd have to persuade your counsellor to provide that for you.
Okay, so it sounds like it's good that that's been addressed.
Yes, absolutely. That's why it was called this cliff edge. You get to the end of the 45 days and there's no help for these victims. It's a really bad situation and they're still so vulnerable after 45 days.
Okay. And then for this question, do all brothels involve trafficking? If not, what's the difference?
Okay, so that is a good question. So legally, no. They're not all prostitutes would be legally defined as being trafficked. But what charities have done is that we work under the basis that all prostitutes are victims. And that might be, even if they claim, the prostitutes, that they want to be there, that this is their right to be there and to sell their bodies in this way. But we, as charities, and this is not just me talking, but people like Stop the Traffic and Care, and then in the US as well, it's been found that practically all people who have chosen to sell themselves in this way have been abused in the past. They have either been neglected in the past or physically abused. They've had some sort of mental trauma. And so for that reason, as charities, we would still classify them as victims, even if they're claiming that they want to be there and it's their right to do this. And I think God would see them that way. I don't think this is his plan for women to be selling themselves this way. So, you know, he would love them and want to restore them. So I think it's right for us to do that as well.
So you're being applying, you know, the concern about trafficking to any brothel?
Yes. Well, we'd certainly be identifying them as a victim. Yes. So then they'd be a victim of abuse rather than a trafficking victim, but still a victim.
Thank you. I've run out of questions, and it is an area where I hope that if we see things, we're really ready now, we have some ideas.
Yeah, we're hoping next week I'll have the cards to give you, which are kind of, they're fold up, but they fit in the wallet, the sort of credit card size. They're very unique, they're very cool. I wish I had one.
Okay, so come back next week to get the cards.
So those are take those slips if you're not here next week.
Yeah, there's open eyes, isn't it?
To
see what's happening.
Yeah, I meant to mention at the time, when I reported the incident in the car park, this car washing, it was 1 week after I'd been to something like this. And I thought, oh, I'm just being neurotic, you know, I'm just making this up. You know, I've been told about trafficking, now I'm seeing it everywhere. But I would encourage you, don't think you're being neurotic. You've been trained about this tonight, you now know the signs. If God wants you to take action, he's going to reveal it to you, isn't he? He's going to take you to places where there's trafficking. So I'd say leave here expecting to see it almost, and then be prepared to take some action. Let's go with that.
Well, thank you so much for this evening, Anna. And I hope that's been useful tonight. So we don't know, do we, how that might well impact victims here in Wiltshire. So, wrapping up tonight, thank you so much for coming. Thank you to Anne and her team of washerwoppers and everybody hosting us. Thank you for that. And next week, I hope you come again, because we're finishing up the series next week. We're looking at care for creation. And our speaker's Bishop Walter from Salisbury. And it's going to be really interesting, because he's involved in climate change negotiations all around the world and by representing the church interests. So he's going to be speaking about climate care and caring for creation as well. So it's going to be really interesting next week, and hope to see you there. Thank you.